Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our final conversation with Dory Olds, we'll talk about the preliminary trial, Mark's plea bargain, and her five-minute divorce. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. I hope you check it out. Also, if you'd be very interested in getting a transcript of this is one of my favorite interviews so far, by the way, please subscribe on our website at gospeltangents.com. And click the yellow subscribe button. If you'd like a paperback like we've got here, I'll send that to you right away. It's just $15 a month, and you'll get this and future interviews in paperback. If you'd like a PDF, that's just $10. So please subscribe today. Now back to our conversation. So let's fast forward then. So you're thinking all through the preliminary hearing and everything. He's still innocent. Mm-hmm. And then the plea bargain comes, I guess.
See, this is very interesting. These are interesting stories because, first of all, I did go to the preliminary hearing for the first 3 days. The last day I went, Steve's wife, I can't remember her name. She's pregnant, and they had photos of Steve when he was bombed and the forensics of how he looked after he had died, and they had passed those pictures around over by, not through the whole audience, but so we were on one side and they were on the other side, but they had passed them around. I guess they'd ask, can I see the pictures or something? Mr. Christensen, I think his father asked, and she looked at the picture, saw her husband dead with the blown up chest. I don't know, I didn't see the picture, but whatever that looked like, and fainted. That's happened in the court. So there was called a recess was called. And I went into the restroom. I was in the stall in the women's restroom. Two women came in that were journalists and started to rip into Steve's wife, Mrs. Christensen, about how she shouldn't be here, how she didn't, if she couldn't take it, she shouldn't be here, and just mean about her and about what had happened. But they didn't know I was in the stall because, but they came in and then they left. And I thought to myself, well, guess what? I am pregnant, because I was. And I don't know. I knew that I was told I needed to go, which I didn't want to even be there anyway. But I was going because it's like, you have to be here. You have to be here. So another coercion, another manipulation, I felt. And
Mark told you had to be
there. No, Mark, not Mark. It was
Ron.
Yeah. Okay. And it's like, I'm providing provenance again. I'm providing that steady father, steady. I don't know what you call it, but it's like giving that background. I'm being used again. And I thought, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen because I don't know how long the preliminary hearing is going to be. I don't know. Right now, to this point, I hadn't gotten sick. I hadn't needed to run out. But if I need to run out and throw up, because I didn't know if I was, because I had that happen before, in my other pregnancies, I was sick. And so it's like, I'm not coming. So I stopped going. That after that incident and listening to those reporters, at those women reporters, I said, I don't care how much I need to be there. I don't care. I'm not going. So I didn't attend any other preliminary but those first 3 days. So I didn't see all the stuff that was happening with all of it. Now what was the question you were asking about the preliminary?
So, yeah, we went up to the plea bargain.
Oh, the plea bargain. Okay, the plea bargain, because he was telling his dad, he was telling me, and he was telling his dad, I'm innocent. And his dad's like, why are you going to plead guilty to this if you're innocent? You don't plead guilty. And I'm going, what is it you're doing? And he told both of us a story, which didn't make sense to me, but I was like, I don't understand this. I don't understand it. I can do nothing. I could never make him do anything. I mean, that's the truth. I could never make him do anything. So I was like out of control, powerless feeling with him. And so he's like, so what he told his dad and I, what he said was, there's a reason why I'm doing this. It's going to protect you and the kids from being killed. That's what he said. Don't know. But see, it's dramatic enough that it's like, okay, but I can't talk about it. I can't tell you. I can't. See, it's this big old, another big story, but I'm innocent, but I'm going to plead guilty. But I'm doing it to protect my family. I'm such a good guy. I'm doing it to protect my family. That's the story. So, yeah.
So,
that's what he said. That's what he said.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
So, in your mind, is it As you look back on it, is it now because Mark was going to kill you or his dad, or is it because he was trying to protect some other mysterious other bomber here from bombing you, and if he pleaded guilty, you'd be safe? Or
you know what? Here's where I was with it. Honestly, I didn't care. Because if he was, I had been told earlier, I don't know how long it was, from that source who I'm learning to trust, you have about 18 months is what I told. You have about 18 months and then he's going to prison. That's what I heard inside me, that I was told. And so, and I still didn't really understand that, because part of me is like, he's not guilty. He's not, why would he go to prison? This isn't going away. But I remember hearing that. And I remember, and I had this feeling, okay, just wait, because I was sick of it. I was sick of the relationship. And so him going to prison was a relief for me. There was part of me was like, what am I going to do? I'm going to be alone. I'm going to be, you know, all that stuff. And what's going to happen now? This whole unknown thing. Mm-hmm. But part of me was like, thank God he's going to be out of my life. You know, that's the truth. Because I kept hearing, just wait. And we hadn't had any more conversation about getting a divorce. My relationship with him was ending. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, just finish playing out the game. Finish playing out the drama. Finish playing this out. And so I just said, it's kind of like this. You hear so many stories. You hear so many lies. You hear so many. It's like, whatever. That's kind of where I went. It's like, whatever. Okay. Go do what you're going to do. You're not asking my permission. You're just telling me, you're just BSing me, you know. I'm not hearing the truth going on here. And that's the story you're telling me. But go, it's like, just go ahead and do what you're going to do, because you're going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. I have no say. And so it's like, okay, so just go along. It's like, okay, that's your story. I'll just.
So you were kind of relieved finally when he went to prison? Mm-hmm. Did you ever go see him after that?
Oh, yeah.
How often or how long or how many times?
I went twice a week for a while, driving out there twice a week. I went by myself, and then I would go and take the kids twice a week for a number of months.
Twice a week? Oh, mm-hmm. So that was pretty frequently.
Pretty, very frequently.
So you were still...
I was still engaged. I was still engaged. I don't know at that point what I was believing. I think I was in that place of, I don't know what to believe. Not really knowing one way. But I still didn't think that he had done it. Yeah, I still hadn't. I'll put it this way. The fact of that he was innocent was starting to kind of crack up a little bit. But I still couldn't see him doing it. Okay. So it wasn't one way, or it wasn't swinging from one way or the other. But it was kind of like, I just still can't see that he did this.
So you still kind of believe this idea that he was just pleading guilty?
I didn't know what to believe.
You didn't know why?
I didn't really believe that story, but I didn't know what to believe. And I didn't know, I couldn't quite believe that he was guilty. So it was sort of that, I was in a little limbo in that time.
Yeah.
And I just took the kids out there, and I didn't really like going. I really didn't like doing it. But I thought, I'm going to do this for a little bit and see what happens. And kind of like I was trying to find myself a little bit. In that, and then I had a woman come in my life, and this is where it's like expect miracles, because we're all known so well. And I had a woman come in who had two children, and she came and lived with her mother, who was on the same street that I was living on, that Mark and I had lived on. And she was there about 6 months, and her husband had gone to prison for armed robbery. Really? I remember my girls saying to their kids, my daddy's in prison. And they're like, so's mine. And my kids are like, oh, someone else is like this. Because they really, their life totally changed.
Yeah.
Because there were families that they couldn't go play with, kids they couldn't play with anymore, people they couldn't be, they were harassed in school. There was a lot that they went through for this. I was like, with my tears, that I don't even know all that happened, because they didn't even tell me everything. Mm-hmm. That they had a hard time. But there were kids that they couldn't go to their house anymore. You know, they couldn't. There was this huge thing that happened with them. So here are these two kids. They're saying, my daddy's in prison. And they're like, well, so? And so here's this friendship. And I got a friendship with this woman, and she actually taught me how you be in prison. The system, the prison system, how you be with the prison system. And I got really good training on how to deal with it, which was excellent. Dude, they don't offer that at prison. You're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me, you're not in a place. You're so emotionally, I don't know what the word she used, fragile or something. But she said, do not make any decisions from this place. Do not make any decisions. Because I told her I'd wanted to get a divorce. And she says, you don't make any emotional decision. You're not ready. You're not able to make wise decisions with you're in this place. So I did not get divorced. I didn't file for divorce. I did nothing. And I know that that astounded a lot of people. And the media were like, what's going on with this woman? What is she really stupid? Is she really, what's wrong with her that she's not filing for divorce? That was the reason, because I was advised not to. And I trusted that woman that she was seeing rightly. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until April, see, January, I think it was the following 87. It was January 87 when he went to prison. And it was April of the following year, because it was 88. The following year, I woke up in April of 88 saying, I can do this now. I felt better. It took me that long. Okay. And that's when I started the process. And it wasn't until August of 88 that it actually came through.
And then that was the 5-minute divorce.
That was the 5-minute divorce. But it was interesting because it was a 5-minute divorce and they waived the 3 weeks. And so when I had to go back, I went back, but there was no media there because they were waiting for the 3-week time, but they didn't know that it had gotten waived. Because I was going, oh shit, they're going to be, when I go down for this final piece, they're going to be, media's going to all be there and stuff, but there was no one there. It was all quiet. And I just went in and did what I needed to do and boom, 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 it all happened. And it wasn't until later that it's like they missed their moment. All the media missed their moment because they didn't realize it. They didn't realize. And there was somebody in the court system that got paid money for leaking out to the media that divorce had gone through.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. Somebody in that court system got paid to say this document went through. Someone in that, and that's how they knew. But they didn't. They weren't there initially. Okay. They missed their moment.
Well, I'm sad to say, my battery's dead. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dori Olds. I'd like to thank Dori for spending so much time talking with us and giving us a real inside scoop on what it was like to live with Mark Hoffman. Thank you, Dori. I really appreciate it a lot. In our next conversation, I'd like to introduce Stephen Shields. He's written several editions of a book, Divergent Paths of the Restoration. How long has he been writing this?
My freshman year at BYU, it just continued getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the first edition of Divergent Paths was published just at the end of my freshman year while I was at BYU.
Wow.
And a second edition came out not too many months later. Just there was more information and more updates, and it took another, 10, 12 years or so to get the third edition out, which was even bigger, and then a few years after that, the fourth edition. And
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.